Welcome to Cool Science Radio, the show where curiosity leads the way. Today, we're talking about brains, genes, and everything in between with Dr. Christopher Gregg from the University of Utah Health. He studies how our brains develop, how our genes influence who we are, and how neural circuits adapt throughout life. From memory to neurological disorders, his research is unlocking some of the brain's biggest mysteries. So get ready for a fascinating dive into the science that makes us, well, all of us, with Dr. Christopher Gregg. Dr. Gregg, welcome to Cool Science Radio.
Thank you very much. I'm delighted to be here and get a chance to chat with you, talk science.
Well, you have a very, very broad range of research that your lab is currently working on. But the one I want to start with is about hibernation. What is hibernation, and why should we as humans care about it?
Oh, well, it's been a very exciting area of focus in the lab over the past several years. Hibernation is an unusual trait that only less than 10% of mammalian species have evolved this superpower. And it's the superpower of metabolic control, extreme metabolic control. They can drop their metabolic rate profoundly, and their internal body temperature for some species can approach almost freezing. And then they stay in that state of suppressed body temperature and metabolism to survive periods of the season, seasons when food is very scarce. And so it's this extraordinary adaptation. And humans, on the other hand, have to get out and find food and stay warm during the wintertime. And we maintain a stable metabolic rate and internal body temperature. So we just don't have this superpower.
Well, of course, you know, the first thing that comes to mind when we think about hibernation on everybody's mind is the obvious: bears, right? I mean, we all know that bears hibernate, and why that's important to them. But why would it be important for humans to adapt this superpower?
Great point. As it turns out, these species that have evolved hibernation, they got a whole bunch of benefits from doing that. And they're benefits that have real potential translational relevance for human health. They have the ability to control their metabolic rate, and they actually become diabetic and insulin resistant, and they can reverse that. So there's no damage or inflammation as a consequence of that. They have the ability to protect their brains from what's essentially like a stroke when they come out of hibernation. All of the blood reperfuses the brain, and that's what actually does a lot of the damage to the brain if you're having a stroke, is the reperfusion and the excitatory stress that's placed on the nerve cells in the brain. And they've evolved a way to protect against that. They have the ability to protect their muscles from atrophy, so they sit in place for long periods of time and their muscles don't degrade. And they can regenerate synapses and clear proteins that in humans are linked to Alzheimer's disease. So they kind of have some secrets for healthy aging, reversing neurodegenerative processes, and they live longer than you would expect for those species based on their body size. So they got all these superpowers, and I want to know how it works, because if I know how it works, then we can start to figure out how would you intervene in a person to boost some of these aspects of our health.
I guess there really are a lot of very interesting topics and points of interest that we could apply to human science. For example, stroke or metabolic disorder, or how to control, I would say, suggest metabolic disease. How did your lab get interested in this topic in the first place?
Well, we study gene regulation in the brain. And the reason we study that is we think there's really a lot of opportunity for discovery in this area. Out of the 3 billion nucleotides that make up the human genome, only 2% encode for genes that make proteins. So the 98% of the DNA nucleotides that we have are doing something else. And the vast majority of them are involved in gene regulation. Their job is to act as switches and encode a program that tells cells when to turn on specific genes and in what combination and where. And we're trying to break the code on that. So we've been trying to break that code. And we thought, well, could we look at how other species changed this code to evolve interesting traits? And maybe that would help us to break the code. And then the question was, well, what traits should we focus on? And we looked through all of these different mammalian species, and it was clear that some species had evolved solutions to diseases that humans were really struggling to solve. And we first started looking at some species like elephants that have evolved solutions for cancer resistance. We looked at dolphins that had evolved solutions for preventing blood clot formation. And it was all very, very exciting and interesting. And as we were working in that field, we learned more and more and more about hibernating species. And it was just clear that they had all of these incredible superpowers. And we wanted to know how it worked and find the DNA program that was underlying all of those adaptations.
So I understand that your lab actually uses some pretty advanced tools to study the brain. Are there any recent technological breakthroughs that have transformed your research as you're looking into this?
Yeah. One of the things, there's maybe two big breakthroughs that have made it easier to understand how the genome works. One is a field called single cell genomics. And for many years, we could cut out a chunk of tissue from the brain or some other part of the body and measure the activity of genes. And that was very informative. We could learn, if you did this, then genes would go up. And if you did that, then some genes would go down, and you start to decode these programs. And we even had techniques for looking at the activity of these non-coding parts of the genome that don't make genes, and they switch on and switch off. But the tissues are made up of many, many different subtypes of cells. And each cell has its own function in that tissue, its own role, its own genetic program. And it was such a conceptual barrier for us to not have technologies that would allow us to study how the genome was operating in specific subtypes of cells. And so now we have these new technologies where we can literally break out individual cells from a sample of tissue and study which genes are on and which genes are off in each individual cell, and which regulatory elements that control the genes are on or off in each individual cell. So we get massive amounts of information, literally sometimes from hundreds of thousands of cells from a single sample.
Okay, this is sounding like a giant circuit breaker panel where you can turn different genes on and off in the brain. This is fascinating. Your lab studies how these genes shape brain development and function. Can you maybe point to, other than the hibernation state, which is fascinating, but point to another maybe exciting finding in a way our non-scientist listeners can understand?
Yeah. So one of the areas that I'm excited about, which is different from the hibernation work, is the genetics of decision-making. And we all have the feeling that we could make all sorts of decisions in any given moment. Maybe I could jump up and run out of the room right now and do something crazy. But in reality, that's not what's going to happen. Your decisions are constrained by how your brain works. And it's the genes, and there are genetic programs that, influence how that brain circuits develop that constrain how you're going to behave, the decisions you're going to make. So I've been very interested in that. And we've found genetic elements in mice that affect decisions and decision-making. And by using those genomic technologies, like the single-cell genomics technologies, we can zero in on the individual elements that are important. And we've done the same thing for hibernation. And then we remove them from the mouse genome to test what they do. When we do that and we remove a specific element that we've learned could be important, we've found that the decision-making processes and behaviors of these mice change as a consequence. And in the hibernation project, we've learned that there are elements that if we extract them and remove them, then their metabolic, their ability to control their metabolism changes.
Wow. So if we turn off that circuit breaker that helps us make good decisions, then we end up bungee jumping.
That's right. We haven't found that exact genetic element yet, but it's out there.
I am interested in how, though, nature can also affect, like we're talking about hibernation when it gets cold. And, you know, again, we'll go back to the bear scenario because that's what I'm familiar with. It gets cold, bears go into a cave, they hibernate, they lower their metabolism to preserve their food storage or I guess glycol storage. But how do genes and the environment actually interact to influence who we are? What we have learned recently about the interplay in shaping the brain itself. Or does it?
Yeah. The environment and the experiences that we have in our life have a profound influence on the activity of our genes. And that activity influences our health and how we feel and how we think. There are a couple of areas that I'm really interested in that domain. One is metabolism. How does what we eat and the inflammatory factors and the different metabolites that are in our circulation influence our genes and our health in the decisions that we make. Another area that is of real interest is stress, and that can be physiological stress. It can be emotional stress. Both of these two big pillars, metabolism and stress, can change marks that get put on the genome. And this is a field called epigenetics, where you can literally get chemical marks that attach themselves to the DNA or to proteins that the DNA is wrapped around. And those chemical marks affect the switches that are controlling your genes. And so if you get a certain mark, mark A, it might turn a gene down or off. And if you get a different mark, it might dial that gene up. And sometimes it can do that in a very specific context or not. So this is how the environment and our physiology interplays with our genome and can reprogram how the genes behave in our brain.
That's fascinating. Is it possible that when some of those genes get turned on by environment that they actually overreact or hyperreact?
Yeah. And, one of the areas that people think a lot about that is in the context of addiction. Both in terms of drug addiction, but also in the context of addictions to food or other behaviors and things like that. And you can develop patterns where you kind of, the word that we often use is canalize. You kind of form this trench in how your genes can behave. And it drives a certain pattern of behavior, and it's hard to break out of that because there are all these marks that have accumulated on your genome, and you need to get rid of them or change them to break out of that trench.
If you're just joining us on Cool Science Radio, we're having a conversation with Dr. Christopher Gregg, a leading expert in neurobiology, anatomy, and human genetics at the University of Utah Health. I want to kind of touch back on this idea of these genes turning on and off and how they affect our behavior. I'm curious, can the change in gene expression in the brain maybe explain our actual development and our behavior? And you touched on addiction, but I'm wondering if maybe there are other areas that would be, we'd be able to, I don't want to say control, but maybe diagnose more accurately. Particularly when we're talking about maybe somebody with either a brain injury or possibly even mental impairments?
Yeah. The places where we think about this the most in terms of development is in, what are the effects of getting an early life infection or having an inflammatory effect or malnutrition in utero? And then after you're born, what are the effects of parental care and stress and support in that environment? And it turns out that inflammation and infections and poor nutrition in utero can affect these epigenetic marks that get placed on our genome. Once those marks start to accumulate, the expression of the genes that are in charge of orchestrating these developmental programs to make sure that cells are generated in the right way and that they connect up correctly with each other so that the brain is operating effectively, those programs can get disrupted or changed. As a consequence, there can be long-term influences on brain function and health. People think that some of these early influences on our genome and brain can start to have big effects later in life. So our risks for Alzheimer's disease and how we age are influenced by these early life events on the epigenome and cell function.
Could this research lead to possible breakthroughs in how we treat depression, for example?
We do think that there are forms of depression that are influenced by metabolism and inflammation and epigenetic factors. We don't fully understand which types of depression are the most mapping to those mechanisms, and we don't have a full understanding of how to intervene to best support, for example, the reprogramming of your brain's epigenome so that you could recover stably from a clinical depression.
Dr. Gregg, what's the one common misconception about the brain or genetics that maybe if you had a chance you could clear up for our listeners, the general public?
That's a good question, Scott. One place that the communication often breaks down between basic scientists like me who get stuck in jargon and our efforts to communicate it more broadly is there is this perception that one gene in the brain or one gene in the genome causes something. And it's often not the case. It's usually many, many, many genes that influence who we are and shape who we are. It's rarely the case that a single gene is causing a particular disease. Those are a special class of diseases called rare Mendelian diseases. The vast majority of the chronic illnesses and different ailments that affect and shape us over the course of our lifetime are influenced by hundreds, if not thousands, of genes interacting in small ways. And so that brings me back to this concept of understanding the gene regulatory programs of how do you program the activity and behavior of many genes to influence health and different traits. I think that that's really the opportunity, and we need to decode that. And it's probably going to be artificial intelligence technologies that help us ultimately to decode that program.
This is fascinating, and I can't thank you enough for taking the time to explain a lot of this to our listeners here on Cool Science Radio. And before I let you go, looking ahead, what are the biggest unanswered questions in neurobiology and human genetics that excites you right now? And where do you see the field going in the next 5 to 10 years?
Well, that is a very exciting question, which I think a lot about. The way that we have approached inquiry in the scientific field around the genetics and the genetic basis of how the brain functions and brain health has still really been studying one piece of the genome, one gene or one genetic element, and trying to figure out what it does. And that framework of thinking about the problem is just so flawed. It's really wrong. We need new ways of understanding the whole program and decoding how biology is encoded in this 3 billion bases of DNA. And it really is beyond what a human mind can manage to decode. And it will be artificial intelligence. And we're already seeing these big, large language models that we're using every day, like ChatGPT, be now applied to understanding the DNA sequence of the human genome, as well as the DNA sequence of other species. And so that will help us decode, I think, how this all works. And then once we sort of get a deeper understanding of how things work, it's going to open up a different perspective on how to treat disease, because we're not going to think one gene, one drug that affects that one gene. We are going to think in terms of combinations and algorithms of care. And what that's going to look like is, if you're trying to resolve an ailment or, you know, alter a maladaptive trait like depression, it may very well be in the future that we're not just thinking about taking one drug. We're thinking about combining drugs in specific sequences and doses to replicate a program that brings you out of that trench that we were talking about before and brings you into a new state by affecting thousands of genes. And this will be done in a very personalized way that's revealed through AI algorithms. And this is something that we work on in the lab. I'm very optimistic that it will be influential for a lot of different areas of healthcare.
Wow. That is very exciting to hear the optimism in your voice. You could just tell how excited you are. Dr. Christopher Gregg, professor in neurobiology, anatomy, and human genetics at the University of Utah Health. Thank you so much for joining us today on Cool Science Radio. This has been fascinating, and I really appreciate it. I would love to have you back in a year or two and see how far we've got, and maybe if you could teach me how to hibernate.
Scott, this was a pleasure. I will be back anytime you need me. It was fantastic.